it's time to take a listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you by Placemakers every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 here on Waiheke Radio. Last Saturday's host was Jan Scott.
Coming up today, very shortly, we'll be talking to Bill Carrig, who recently took out a full-page ad in the marketplace regarding the proposal for us to secede from Auckland City and go with Thames Coromandel. We'll get his take on that. Then we'll be talking to Briar Ross about the Jazzy Sundays. Following that, I'm going to have a truly awful conversation with Steve the Butcher, and we'll end up having a chat to Lloyd Whittaker about a great concert that's coming up tonight at Whittaker's Museum. And we're about to speak to Bill Carrig, who's with us today, to talk about what prompted him to take out a full-page open letter to Nobelangelo Ziralis in the marketplace. Good morning, Bill. Thanks for coming.
Good morning, Jan. Thank you for inviting me in.
Not a problem. Why are you against the idea of moving from Auckland City to Thames Coromandel?
Well, let's just recap the whole reason for taking out the advertisement. First of all, I travel and I meet a lot of people in my daily life in and around the island, through hospice, through the rugby club, and, of course, the general commute. And most people I spoke to with the local government commission coming out and setting out the terms of references, most people said, oh, that's not going to happen. Well, tragically, sometimes these things do happen and they slip through. So the more I thought about it, the more it annoyed me that this was proceeding in terms of economic lunacy. And so I decided to do something about it. I might add, I did have that letter penned for some considerable time, probably 3 months, to Mr. Nobelangelo. And it was just that was the commission really forced my hand, and in letters to the editor you don't get the full space, so it was really a question of putting your money where your mouth is.
And what sort of feedback have you had?
Well, it's been very humbling. It's been enormous, from people from Rakino, from Great Barrier Island, right round the island, from emails. It kind of took over there for a week. And very little of my own business got attended to. But it, to a person, there hasn't been a single negative. There's been other twists on the whole proposal, but certainly everybody's fully supportive. And I think that's demonstrated by the petitions that are circulating around now.
Now, you mentioned the petitions. Should we perhaps clarify that? I understand it's not so much a petition as a submission that a number of people can sign.
That's correct. Yeah, that's the wrong terminology, I guess. It's really the signatories to a submission. And one person alone has already collected over 350. So it will be an overwhelming submission against pulling out of Auckland City and going to Thames Coromandel.
Right. One of the concerns that we've had from a listener is, for instance, if we're taken ill and we're with Thames Coromandel, do we end up in Waikato Hospital? I don't know that you can answer that, but it's one of the concerns that's been brought up.
Well, I think there's more questions that remain unanswered than are answered in the whole process. For example, I haven't managed to read anywhere where, in fact, Thames Coromandel have said where they're opening up their arms to welcome us. There's certainly no motion that's been passed in their committees to say, Waiheke, we want you.
Yes, that is an interesting point, that Thames Coromandel hasn't even put out a press release or written a letter to the editor of the papers on the island saying, you know, we're waiting for a Waiheke to join us, or not.
Well, it's all our infrastructure assets that are the ratepayers of Thames Coromandel prepared to pay for those? Are they prepared to pay for Maatiatia Wharf? Are we all of a sudden going to see Maatiatia Wharf tax paying for the Kopu Bridge?
That's a very good point. Some people would say that the bullet points that you put into your letter were a bit specious and really were a bit alarmist.
Let's be frank. Tourism Auckland's not going to fund any promotion into Waiheke. The Waiheke tourism community fights hard for every dollar that they get spent on this, even though there is a big economic benefit to both parties. Regarding the gold card, no one can answer. Certainly, Auckland Regional Council pays a huge subsidy towards the maintaining of transport facilities in and around the area that they govern. I'm not sure that Waikato are going to pay the same contribution for us. So that's a still unanswered question. The government pays a percentage, but as I understand from Mike Lee, that there is a top-up coming from ARC to those gold card holders. The next one, hospitalisation, who would know? That's still an unanswered question. The other points I don't have in front of me, but I think there's more unanswered questions than there are answers out there just on the $2 million and the $3 million. I just asked the question, why Thames Coromandel? If we were going to have this debate, why not look at something more logical and common sense like Rodney, maybe North Shore, or get back to the Manukau? These are issues, but I think it's just in today's life, people always feel dissatisfied with monopolies, and that's exactly what Auckland City are, but it's a fact of life, and I don't think in any community there's a 100% success level of satisfaction with communities feeling towards their local body.
Yes, I think quite possibly that the 700 people that signed Mr. Serramalis's petition were voicing their frustration at Auckland City rather than really voicing their enthusiasm to join Thames Coromandel.
That's probably that I think is the nub of it all. It's not the issue of moving from one local authority to another. I think it was very much a protest vote against Auckland City and everyday life. We all feel those being an island. It's the only rural area that Auckland City administer. But hey, we've got it, and the benefits financially certainly far outweigh any negativity that Auckland impose. I think there's certain characteristics of our island life that we'd like to maintain. Things are being imposed, but that's not the debate at the moment. It's the debate about moving from here, where we are in Auckland City, to Thames Coromandel, and that is common sense has got to prevail. It's illogical. It doesn't make economic sense. And from a just a pure logistics sense, you become speechless on it. One of the things that's interesting overnight that the Thames Coromandel, the ferry service between Auckland and Coromandel finishes in next month sometime. So maybe we need to reflect on that as well.
Good point. Excuse me. The submission that's doing the rounds at the moment, I understand, is a submission to halt the petition going any further until the Royal Commission's findings have been announced. Is that correct?
Well, everything sort of went down a parallel track. It wasn't constructed in any formal strategy. It was just that John Collings and I happened to be talking, and we both divulged that we were doing different things. Mine came out first, the letter which raised the interest. John backed it up by circulating the submission. The submission, there's an opportunity there in the opening statement of the terms of reference that the Commission can accept, as I understand it, and I'm sure there's other listeners out there who have got a better take on this. My understanding is the Commission can accept can make a decision whether to proceed or not to proceed in accepting the submission or to review the submission. Now, that sort of gave us an opportunity to prove, if we can prove to the Commission, that there's enough interest to ensure that this doesn't proceed, it won't proceed. And the big product of that, of course, is we save a whole chunk of money, and that's quite important in today's environment. It's pretty tough out there, so let's save as much money as we possibly can.
We're talking to Bill Carrig, the gentleman who put a full-page open letter to Noble Angelo Ceramalis in the marketplace a couple of weeks ago about the possibility or otherwise of us seceding from Auckland City and going to Thames Coromandel. Bill's giving us his take on that issue. Thank you, Bill. The other side of it is, the ARC, do we know how they feel about all of this?
Well, only that Mike Lee, and I'd have to say he was probably prompted because of he received a copy of the letter that was going in the paper. Mike wrote to Minister of Local Government, Rodney Hyde, and suggested that everything be terminated or postponed pending the Royal Commission's inquiry into the Greater Auckland area. Now, you know, that's a big boys politics scenario there, and I don't wish to offer any suggestions because it's not going to be a super city by international standards. It's we're still a small pond down in this part of the world, so we need to be practical about it. Look, we could spend the next three months debating whether the pros and cons, where we fit into it. Who knows where we fit into it. But one point I'd just like to make on Thames Coromandel, I don't think the residents over there have been told that they might have to what it's going to mean on their rates by the capital cost of purchasing the assets from Waiheke, which aren't altogether inconsiderable if you take just the wharves alone, and the infrastructural costs. They're things that that their ratepayers haven't been informed about, to the best of my knowledge, anyway.
You made a point just a moment or two ago that it's probably an important one to pick up on from Mr. Ceramalis's point of view, that the submission that's doing the round at the moment is not trying to stop his petition going forward. It's merely the timing of it. As far as the Royal Commission goes, why consider the petition before we know the outcome of that, because we don't know what the shape of Auckland City is going to be after that report comes out. It could be quite different, and we may feel quite differently about Auckland City after it.
Yeah, well, everything's kind of taken its head, really. I think Noble Angelo's submission, well, his idea possibly came out before the Royal Commission's terms of references, and so therefore they're running down a parallel path. Look, I haven't had a chance to go into the intricacies of that. I certainly know that there's an overwhelming depth of feeling on the island that they don't want to go with Thames Coromandel, and that's the fundamental issue here. It's not whether we get caught up and hooked up into the super city argument. The key thing here is the vast majority of the islanders do not want to become part of Thames Coromandel. They see it as just deficient of any common sense.
Yeah, and the submissions that went forward from Waiheke to the Royal Commission, which were considerable, there certainly didn't seem to be a lot of support or any support for going with Thames Coromandel. It was a very, very small number of people that put in those submissions. But the vast majority of the submitters were very much in favour of more autonomy for Waiheke. And, of course, there is another scenario just lurking out there, maybe only a year or two down the track, where we get another 1,500 permanent residents and we're up to the 10,000 mark, which would allow us to look at perhaps at becoming completely autonomous.
I think Auckland City probably doesn't take note that the community here is different to Mangakikiki or Avondale or Epsom. I mean, say all those infrastructural issues are already in place there. They've got footpaths, they've got their roading issues. Whereas here on the island, I think it is a special case. And the community board, who would ever want to be on the community board for the time that you have to donate to looking after the affairs of the island? It's It's a full-time job, and you can't hold a paid job and be a community board member on its own, and I think they do a sterling effort. And it's because of the sacrifices that they have to make personally and look after the island affairs. But Waiheke, it is a special situation. The island isn't covered with footpaths, although it seems to be getting there's a fast move to do that. And everything is different. It's a micro of a macro situation, and quite frankly, I think that sometimes gets forgotten about in Auckland City. Now, I'm sure there's people in Thames Coromandel who would have certain empathies with us, just as there are communities in the central Otago or around the Abel Tasman area who would have empathy with the situation we're faced with. But that's not compounding enough. There's not economic logic to dictate that says we should secede from Auckland City just because they have empathy. Do they have the money? I would suggest if we went to Thames Coromandel, it'd have every chance of bankrupting them, probably.
Right. Now, we know that there is a submission out there for those people who don't commute, because there have been a lot going around on the ferries. There are a few on the island. I'm not quite sure exactly where they all are. I know there's one at the barn at Ostend that's been going very well. Do you have any idea where else they are?
The Blend, under Blend Cafe in, where are we, by the supermarket there. I understand there's another one circulating possibly at the Waiheke Fruit and Veg Shop. All the key areas. People aren't standing with the borders, I understand, harassing. That's the one part of the campaign that's probably a little, it's left to volunteers, people to use their own initiative, because this thing took off at such a rapid rate. The response was just overwhelming to a point that people on Great Barrier, as I said, Rakino, and even the bottom end islands were also commenting and ringing me up. So... hey, if it started something off like the Rolling Stones, it's all good stuff to bring about a level of common sense to our beautiful island.
Is the submission available on a website or available from somebody, or should we get it downloaded onto the radio station's website, Tootsweep?
I think it's probably, if it's possible, it would be preferable to put it onto the radio website. I think those in the know, shall we say, and this island is full of quasi-amateur activists of some cause, meaning they're all well-meaning people. I think I'm well-meaning on this. I'm sure Noble Angelo is well-meaning on what he's been doing. It's just that I think common sense has got to prevail. But it would be an excellent idea to put it onto the website.
I think we might arrange that. Just in summary, Bill, is there anything you'd like to round off with?
No, I'd just like to thank the community for their generosity and their comments. It was a very humbling experience, and I think a lot of people, it was just really a question of, it's like people flicking sand in your face, I guess. You can take it for so long and you get up and punch them. So that's really how I felt about it. I guess all I did was expose the mood of the community, and that's how it is.
That's great. Thank you very much, Bill. We've been speaking to Bill Carrig, the gentleman who took out a full-page ad in the marketplace as an open letter to Noble Angelo Hieromalis about the petition to secede from Auckland City and go with the Thames Coromandel District Council. Now, there are copies of the submission around on the island and also being touted around on the ferries, and we'll have a copy up on the website of the radio station later in the week. Thank you, Bill. You are listening to our very own weaver of dreams, Briar Ross, who joins me now. Welcome, Briar.
Thank you.
And we're talking about one of the really important things on our What's On calendar list, the Jazzy Sundays that Briar organises at the Wine Barn in Karora Road. Tomorrow's Jazz Sunday will feature Santiago, a five-piece Latin band, and, of course, our own Al Reeve. Briar, can you tell us something about Santiago? I gather that they were really popular at the jazz festival you organised on the island last Labour weekend.
Yes, they were. Yeah, they're a five-piece band, so they're quite a big group. Really great Latin kind of feel, wonderful musicians. So I've built a little stage down there. I hope they all fit on, that's the only thing. I've made a little stage, hoping all our Sundays through March and April will be fine down at the barn, which is opposite Peninsula Estate down in Karora Road.
Right. It sounds like a really good deal. You know, $10 is quite a modest sum these days, and kids under 12 free, so it's a real family event.
It is, yeah. We want to make it accessible for people, and we're providing wine and beer and food, which will also be reasonably priced. And I love to provide events where children can come along and hear live music, because they don't often have that opportunity these days.
A very good point, and I think that's a great great thing to do. Do you take along your own camper chair, or are there chairs there? And
yeah, well, no, there's grass there, basically. Yeah, so it's a good idea to bring something to sit on, a sand chair or a chair. There are a few chairs, and we're going to provide a little bit of shade, but it's a good idea to bring something along as well.
And are people able to take a picnic lunch, or do they buy food?
Not really. We prefer that they buy things there. We need to cover our costs, obviously. We've got to pay musicians and all sorts of things, so that's how we do that.
Fair enough. Now, the Santiago group, where do they, are they based in New Zealand, or they come from overseas?
No, they're based in Auckland. Nathan Porter is the leader of the group. So they're based in Auckland, and they gig around there quite a bit. Apart from that, I don't know an awful lot about them, but I just know that they were very popular at the jazz festival.
And they obviously play Latin American type
music. Latin American type music, and I'll be singing two or three songs at each set with them, and then Al Reeve will be the support act, filling in for half an hour between, so it's great to have Al back again.
Absolutely, yes, yes, because he's been off the scene for a wee while.
Yes.
And I heard him play recently, and he's back to his old form, that's for sure.
So good.
That'll be worth listening to. Okay, so you've got a whole series of these coming up until the end of April.
Yeah.
Give us a bit of background on some of them and who people should come along and see.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll just try to provide a variety of things for people so that, to cover all kind of angles. I was just going to do it for March, and then there was so much work involved, I thought I might as well do it for April. It's the same amount of work, really. And April, of course, includes Easter weekend, and since we don't have an Easter Jazz Festival, it means that there's something on at Easter. And again, from the Jazz Festival, I've brought back the Nairobi Trio, who are always fantastic and so popular. So I'm really praying for a nice, fine day on Easter Sunday.
That's Easter Sunday is the day that Nairobi Trio are playing, is
yes,
it right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
We've and got, what date is that?
That is the 12th of April. And now that's actually $20 instead of $10, just because a band like that obviously costs a little bit more to get over here.
Sure.
And talking about weather, if it isn't fine, then we're going to use the barn that's actually there, and there's a courtyard that we can cover with marquees as well. So if it's not that great, then we'll just move into the barn.
It's a bit of atmosphere.
Yes. And then we've got two series of local musos using various people, the Robinson Brothers and Chocolate Fish and myself. That's after this weekend. The last one in March is Trudy Lyle, who's a wonderful singer and flautist, and she's got a great group, does sort of Latin-y kind of stuff. Mojave is her group. And then the first one in April is Gumbo, which is a really great blues band. So they'll be busy there in April. And then the local musos again. And then we're finishing with the Bridge City Jasmine Quartet. It's a very famous group that's been around for a long time. A lot of old guys, and they are so
absolutely
cool.
Absolutely. They're great, aren't they?
Yes.
Good old jazz star. Now, I'm sure there were a lot of our readers out there like me who followed your column in the Golf News during your trip to France, and we're absolutely drooling over it and wished we could be with you. Have you got anything like that planned up again?
I haven't, no. I think I'm a bit like everybody else. I'd just be, pulling my horns in a little bit this year. I mean, I'd love to go back again. There's a possibility to go back and perform when somebody's offered me something, but nothing this year. But I'm glad people really enjoyed those articles, because I certainly enjoyed writing them. I was surprised, actually, how many people that hadn't even been to France found them interesting, which was great.
Yes, indeed. We're talking to Briar Ross. She's telling us something about the Jazz and Blues and the Vines that she's organised through to the end of April. And tomorrow is starting at noon. Is $10 cover charge, and we've got a 5-piece Latin band called Santiago, as well as our own Al Reeve. Now, Briar, you're a pretty busy artist yourself. What are you up to at the moment?
I'm going to be a bit of a rush on the 22nd getting back, because I'm going down to Christchurch and Dunedin to perform a couple of private functions down there. And then I won't be here for the Gumbo one at all, because I'm going to be up in Whangarei doing and Tutukaka doing a couple of things up there. So they had things I'd already organised. I keep busy doing different things, and I'm planning to try and get a jazz festival off the ground again for this year. It will be sometime in November if it happens, but trying to find some sponsorship, because it's rather a lot of outlay for me just to carry myself. So that's my next project.
Yeah, we can understand that. So if there's anybody out there listening with a spare bit of cash in the back pocket, sponsor Briar for her jazz festival later in the year. Briar, have you had any been in the recording studio lately?
Well, just last year I recorded my fourth CD, which was one of the tracks that you just played. And
That's off the Fly Me to the Moon
CD. So that's number four, so that's the latest one. I love recording, but it takes quite a lot of time getting it all organised. And that one is actually dedicated to my mother, who died in April last year, aged 89. So that sort of motivated me to record the song Fly Me to the Moon, which was what she had asked me to perform for her at her funeral, although she didn't realise she was going to be going quite so soon. So I unfortunately remembered that. So that's how...
What a great memorial.
Yes.
And thank you, Briar, for coming in and telling us about what you're up to and about these wonderful jazzy Sundays, and we encourage everybody to get down there. It's a good family event, $10, kids under 12 free, and some great music to expose them to. You're listening to Island Life, and we now introduce and welcome Steve Hill from the Village Butchery. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Jen. How are you?
Pretty good. And I think we're going to have a pretty awful conversation this morning, aren't we?
Yes. We'll get all the jokes out of the way first.
Yes. Well, I mean, you've got that sign right outside saying, get your iron here. So iron is a really good source in liver and such like, isn't it?
Liver is full of it, yes. Kidneys, it's pretty good for you. Awful, actually.
That's right, except it's not. Doesn't look very nice, and most of us sort of cringe at the idea.
It frightens a lot of people, probably because they've had it and it's not been cooked properly in the past, and that sort of puts people off.
I've got a girlfriend who makes beautiful lamb's fry and bacon with mushrooms. It's absolutely gorgeous, but if I try to do it, it comes out like leather.
You're cooking it too long.
Ah, right. And besides which, I hate you know, handling it. It's all slimy and ugh. Yes.
That's only food.
So, what would you? How do we overcome our attitude to offal?
Think positively. I think, like I said, people have probably had bad experience with it in the past. And that sort of stays with them for life, basically. But I think people naturally tend to overcook things like liver because of its slimy and its... Whereas if you actually just cook it nice and light quickly and have it pink, it's...
So would you cook it whole or would you slice it up? Or?
I just like to slice it really thin, season flour and fry it in bacon fat just for a minute aside and have it nice and pink.
And you would serve that with bacon?
Bacon, mashed buds, onion gravy, classic.
What would you recommend as something, as a starter, perhaps, for people who may have a slight aversion to offal? Is there a dish that you think would convert people?
Well, chicken livers is a classic. People will eat chicken livers and think that's quite, I don't know, exotic. Whereas they wouldn't go for lamb liver, calf's liver, that sort of thing.
Do chicken livers have the same iron content?
Yep, they're quite high in iron.
Right, because they're nicely done with a bit of brandy, you know, or do it in a liver pate or something.
Yeah, again, we had livers this morning for breakfast at the shop, chicken livers, and just lightly cook them, don't overcook them. That's the worst thing you can do. It is quite delicate. So if you just lightly fry it.
Now, have you ever had any experience with goose livers?
The old foie gras, yes.
Well, I wasn't thinking so much of the foie gras. I was just thinking about how we could help the Manukau City Gardens get out of their problem with all the geese they've got over there. I thought maybe we could find a creative way to use them.
Well, certainly there's an opportunity there for an enterprising type person. Easter's coming up, traditional roast goose at Easter.
Yeah, well, a bit
can't
of stuffing.
Go wrong with that. Yeah.
No, we might be giving people a wrong idea, of course, and they have the SPCA down on our heads. But getting back to the foie gras, of course, we know that the geese that are used for that are force-fed, and that's pretty inhumane, isn't it?
It is. They're actually quite sad things to look at because they can hardly walk. their liver's that inflamed, I suppose. It's they don't look happy.
No, I bet they don't. And you wouldn't think that that would do the meat any good either. You know, if you've got a stressed animal, they usually say that, you know, if you've got a stressed animal, then the meat's tougher. But that doesn't seem to work in this case.
Well, the livers in those birds are pretty well marinated while they're still alive.
Heavens, that sounds a bit gruesome. You're saying you had some bacon and liver and bacon in the shop this morning. Are you giving people taste sensations, are you?
Well, no, that was just for breakfast for us.
Right.
I just fancied some liver and bacon for breakfast this morning. So
Fair enough.
That's what we had.
Fair enough. And what about things like sweetbreads? You could make fritters out of sweetbreads, can't you, and brains?
Yes. You breadcrumb them and pan-fry them. Again, classic dishes. Nut brown butter, lamb's brains. Again, thinly sliced, breadcrumbed, pan-fried.
Mm.
Quite nice.
Doesn't sound too bad. I'm Jan Scott, your host on Island Life, and I'm picking the brains at the moment of our village butcher, Steve Hill.
Was that a pun then?
Well, pretty weak one, but never mind. Yeah, we're talking offal because offal has an awful lot of goodness in it for us. It's got liver, it's got vitamin B and all the things that we need. But it's something that a lot of us have an aversion to or have. We can't quite bring ourselves to try it. And Steve's trying to give us some suggestions as to how we could be brave and have a go and really open up our taste buds.
Well, the best thing I could recommend is not be frightened of it. Be brave and have a go.
And the big thing is don't overcook.
Don't. The liver, kidneys, you need to have them a little bit pink. Kidneys aren't too critical, but the liver, if you overcook that, you end up with something akin to a shoe sole.
Right. Now, is there a particular type of liver that's better than others? I mean, we've talked about chicken livers, which a lot of us, it's probably one of the few offals that we eat willingly. But what is the difference between lamb's fry and calf's liver, for instance? Is calf's liver stronger?
Calf's liver is quite a mild tasting. It's a little bit finer than lamb liver. But ox liver, again, is older, tougher, a little bit more robust, shall we say. We used to get that at school for dinners, and it was cooked for hours, and that was pretty almost like MDF that's been left in the rain.
So you could almost have played football with it by the sound of it. That would surely have put you off. Did it take you a while to get back to eating offal, or you didn't let it discourage you?
I am very omnivorous. I will have a bash at anything. I mean, I'm not one of those people that say I don't like that, even though I've never tried it. There are things that I've eaten that I probably would never eat again, but at least I've had a go.
Oh, can you tell me about one of those? What's the most unusual thing you've eaten?
Feijoas. I can't get my head around those things.
I didn't expect that answer. it's feijoas. I agree with you. I think they're overrated.
Whitebait. I don't see the excitement in that somehow. Meat-wise, there's a few oddball sort of Asian bits and pieces that I wouldn't want to try again, but generally speaking, I'll have a go at anything. But
so, what's the best thing you've tried that's out of the usual radar?
There's something that I haven't seen it in New Zealand, and even back in the UK, it was on its way out then, which is cow's udder.
Good grief.
Which is absolutely gorgeous.
Is it really?
It is beautiful.
Is it, one would think it would be fatty, and has it got a lot of meat in it?
It's almost like thick milk cheese. It's got a, it's not a meat texture. It's almost like a pate kind of texture to it, but with some malt vinegar, black pepper, good brown bread, and lots of butter. It's beautiful.
And do you boil it or fry it?
It's cold. Eat it cold with a salad.
But you don't eat it raw, obviously. How do you cook
it? No, it's cured. It's when we had places that did tripes, that was the same sort of. It's blanched and pre-cooked, and just sliced really thin. What did we used to have that in Manchester? The UPS. They used to do the tripes and trotters, and that was the whole shop, basically. They had a little cafe thing there as well, so you could go and eat. But you got the whole offcuts, as it were.
Yeah, well, of course, there was a time when the butcher used to give those things away, and now, of course, they're worth quite a bit of money.
They're worth a lot of money in places like Japan, things like that. Tripe, ox tongue, that sort of stuff goes for big money. It's exported.
Nothing like an oxtail stew in the wintertime.
Oh, no, stick to your ribs. That's another thing that you can't get nowadays, is that the actual cow heel, which is the sort of foot, basically, of the cow, and that gives you a really, really good gelatinous gravy.
Is that because it's used for other purposes? Do they render it down? Or?
It probably ends up in glue these days, but more than likely some busybody in the Department of Food Police has deemed it unfit for human consumption. If it is available, it will be exported. Again, it's one of those, ooh, yuck, you don't eat that. But you know, steak and curry or pie, real good winter, stick to your ribs, keep you warm all day sort of thing. If this recession or whatever it is that's happening at the moment carries on, people might be getting back into that.
Indeed, wasting nothing.
I might be able to sell a few ox hearts and things to roast.
Exactly, that'd be great, yes. And give people a little recipe with it, one of Steve's famous recipes.
Roast ox heart is pretty good.
Right, I'll believe you. I don't think I'll go down that track myself.
You wouldn't know if I give it to you.
I probably wouldn't, and that's one way of getting me to try things. Okay, well, we've been having an awful conversation with Steve Hill, the village butcher, and if you've noticed, he's got a sign outside at the moment saying, get your iron here, and we thoroughly recommend that you do. Go in there and get some lamb's fry or chicken livers, and cook yourself up a storm and get ready and healthy for the winter ahead. Thank you, Steve.
Cheers, thank you.
Now we welcome Lloyd Whittaker to the studio. Lloyd probably needs no introduction. He's going to tell us a few things about Whittaker's Museum, and he's also going to tell us about a great concert that's coming up tonight. Welcome, Lloyd.
Thank you very much for having me here. Thank you. You're speaking about the concert tonight. We've got a lovely string quartet and a pianist, a very highly qualified pianist, performing. It's 7 o'clock this time. Normally our concert at 5, but this is at 7 o'clock, and it's going to be really great.
That's the Matariki String Quartet.
That's right.
Are they a local group?
No. They got together in Wellington. I think some are from Christchurch, and they formed this quartet, and they won a big prize sometime last year. When some of you would remember, we had a string quartet with piano from London about 3 or 4 months ago, and they came to New Zealand to about 3 or 4 places to perform, and they had won accolades in London, and they chose this string quartet to go to London sometime later this year, I believe.
Oh, wow, that's great for them.
Yeah.
They're also being joined by Justin Bird.
Yes.
On the piano.
Yes.
And we noticed that Justin has gained his Bachelor of Music at Auckland University, and then he went on to gain a Master's of
that's
Music
right.
at Florida State University. That he was the Young Performer of the Year in 2002, and that he's played as a soloist with every major orchestra in New Zealand.
Wonderful.
That's pretty impressive.
Yes, he performed here, I think, about 2 years ago. I can't remember just which concert it was, but he's really a top pianist, and he plays anything from Bach, Brahms, Rachmaninoff, Mendelssohn, probably Chopin, and he'll be playing some of those composers tonight.
Right, so it's a mixture of well-known composers,
yes.
basically,
yes,
in their...
Yes.
In their string music, as well as he will be playing solo as well?
Oh, yes. Right. Yes, probably mostly solo tonight.
Okay. Yeah. That's excellent. It starts at 7 o'clock, by the way, and it's at Whittaker's Museum at 7 p.m. tonight. $20 adults, $15 seniors, and $7 for children. Lloyd, these concerts that you organise at the museum are well patronised, aren't they?
They are more and more so each year as we go on. And we're rather concentrating on classical at the moment because there's jazz being played all around the vineyards, right around the island, and we get a larger crowd if we have a pure classical concert. It's quite amazing, but there's many people on the island that starve for really top classical music.
And do you think that this concert tonight will be a good one to introduce children to some of the slightly more serious classical music?
Any children that are having music lessons, particularly on the strings, will really love it. I don't think there's anything in modern composers which they probably wouldn't understand, but I think it would be suitable for all.
So it's a good family entertainment.
Yeah, good family entertainment as well. I would say any child from 10 and old would really enjoy it.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And just in case there are some people out there who are usually used to going along at 5 o'clock so they can get home early before it gets dark and cold, it starts at 7 tonight. What time roughly is it, do you think?
It'll go for an hour and a half, I imagine.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's 8.30 so that they can get back to town on the ferry, I guess.
Sure, yes.
Yeah. And I noticed at the bottom of the ad for the concert that that Fuller's Ferries and the Auckland City have supported. Is that supporting Whittaker's as such, or supporting this particular concert?
No, it's supporting the concert and the trust. It's rather a complicated system here, but Fuller's, of course, transport our musicians over free, which is wonderful of them, so we like to thank them very much. Auckland City have helped us at odd times, not every year. Last year, I think we didn't. Hopefully, we'll get more help this year to help produce these concerts. We'd like to do more advertising. It's very expensive, of course, and we share the proceeds with the artists, and the trust get the second half of it. The trust has to be supported in some way, of course, because during the winter months the museum loses a tremendous amount of money with lack of patronage. But during the summer, at the moment, this is the best summer ever because of the free transportation of the senior citizens, so we're very thankful for that.
So that's obviously made a huge difference to you.
Yes, which is
have you had busloads of people, of senior citizens coming over?
Oh yes, many, two or three a week at the moment.
That's great. And you do a live show this afternoon, don't you?
Yes, it's 1:30 this afternoon. We had a phone call yesterday, 15 senior citizens coming over at the last minute, and there'll be casuals as well, so that's very good.
And how much does that cost?
$10 for a tour, doesn't matter how many there are, and $12.50 for adults. Senior citizens are always 10, and children 7 again.
Mm. Right, so that's well worth looking at. Mm. And, of course, on the days when you and Joan aren't there, there is a video presentation at 1:30 of your show, isn't there?
Well, the video goes most from 1 o'clock onwards, but more people... they just come down and watch it on DVD, of course, and they see exactly what we do at the live show.
But, now, tell me, how did you and Joan start your collection? What started it off? How did you get into this business?
Well, I've been into music all my life as a performer from a kid, really, and I was always very keen on different instruments. And we went to England. We always had some antiques too. We always had about half a dozen beautiful antique instruments in our home in New Plymouth, a very large home. And we went to tour around England in 1989, and we visited every musical museum we could find. And we found quite a few of them, and we were very excited, but we didn't, most cases, didn't hear a sound. It was all, if you did hear a sound, it was a CD playing, some of the composers that had their piano still available to see. But you couldn't touch an instrument. Wherever we went, they were cordoned off or on a dais, and there's no way you can get near a famous piano of Mozart or Beethoven or Liszt. We're in Liszt studio in Budapest, and you can get fairly close there, but if you're caught touching an instrument, they'd order you out of the building immediately with the cameras shining on you. So we're very disappointed about that. And Germany, there's a lovely musical museum, 3 floors, 16th century, 17th century, 18th century, and so on. We asked if we could have a look into some instruments or perhaps play some. And the answer was 9, of course. And they followed us around, a lady followed us around continually right through the building so that we didn't touch anything. They're scared we're going to rip a ivory off or something and have it for a souvenir.
I know that's something that people visiting Whittaker's Museum appreciate. I'm a volunteer there once a month, and people can't believe that they're able to play Paderewski's piano. And everybody, without exception, in my experience, has treated it with respect, and nobody has abused it. Even the children, they're absolutely over the moon that they can do this.
Mm. Yes, we always say under supervision or their parents there, but we always make sure that they don't knock things around, of course, and they really love it. And we have concert pianist visiting us 2 weeks ago. We had two concert pianists in an afternoon visit us. One was a Japanese, very, very highly qualified pianist, and he had a note in his pocket, produced us a note from somewhere in America, I think it was, that he must find Whitakers in New Zealand if he's coming over here. And what a wonderful performance he did after we finished our show. So these are privileges that we get, and everyone stays behind to hear fantastic, you know, world-class performance.
Yes, we're very lucky. We're talking to Lloyd Whittaker of Whittaker's Museum. He's been telling us about a concert that's coming up tonight of the Matarangi Street String Quartet and pianist Justin Bird. It starts at 7 p.m. I'm also asked Lloyd how he and Joan got into the business in the first place. And you mentioned, Lloyd, that you had some antique instruments in your home. Were these things that you'd inherited or you'd seen in a shop and decided to buy?
We'd bought them as they come on the market. Well, I have one instrument, a little concertina, which I play every day I'm down here, that was in my family in England. And I came to New Zealand in the 1860s with my great-great-grandparents, got handed down a few generations, and I virtually was given it to me because I was playing accordion from 7 years old. And I've still got it, still play it, and I have a whole collection of concertinas, of course, and accordions, and we have some very, very famous theatre organ, and we had some of those smaller things in our home. Always had a grand piano and an organ, of course. And here, of course, it's got up to over 100 instruments now. And we've sussed them out. Some smaller ones came from Australia overseas, and all the larger ones have come from around New Zealand. We have Paderewski's concert grand, of course, big 9-footer that he brought to New Zealand in 1904. And that's got a lot of history behind it. And another Bechstein, there's, as I say, theatre organ, there's the old transposing piano from the silent movies. We've got a sailing ship piano, 1837, which I've restored and play. Dulcitones, of course, they're beautiful instruments, and they're glockenspiel, and then pianola history. And these are slowly we put together in New Plymouth about 20 years ago, and then we heard a program on radio one night, or it might have been television. I think Mike Delamore, who knows Mike on the island here, was being asked, just like I am now, about Waiheke, and he was telling us what a wonderful climate it was up here, and he had the artworks and a whole lot of things he was talking about. And so I got his phone number and phoned him about 5 minutes after the end of the program, and he said, we may have a place in artworks for you. And then they sent down Colin Vaughan, who was on the trust at the time. He visited us, said, yeah, we want you up here. And then very fortunately for us, of course, saved us many thousands of dollars as Sir Britsky's offered to come and get us with a huge 22-wheeler truck and another truck as well from New Plymouth. And then it took us about 3 months to get set up where the picture theatre is now. And it just went from there. And it took a long time getting established, but Fuller's have been gracious. They have supported us all the way through, particularly in the early days, because we were desperately short of finance for a long time there. And George Hudson, I'll never forget coming in the museum on a couple of times. He was on our trust, and he was most generous in helping us with difficult times getting through the winter months. But we're very happy to be here. We love the island, and as I say, the museum is flourishing at this time, and we trust it's going to be kept. It's in a trust now, and the trust are responsible for finance, and we've got Nauru's there, and it's secured for New Zealand, but hopefully it's going to be secured for Waiheke Island in the indefinite future. Joan and I, of course, are getting a bit old in the tooth now, but we will go as long as we can. So any other information you'd like to know?
Well, I'd just like to let everybody know out there that Whittaker's Museum is open 7 days a week, mm-hmm. From 1 o'clock to 4. It's staffed by volunteers, and Lloyd and Joan do a live production on a Saturday at 1:30. But you can come in there any time, apart from when the show is on, and it's free, we do ask if you can give a donation. There's a donation box there. But you can come in and have a look around at the wonderful instruments that are there, watch the video, and it's a great way to spend time, and kids love it. One of the things the kids really love, but I don't think it's in action at the moment, is the orchestrion, which is like a play of piano, but it's got drums and all sorts of other instruments in it. It's a real one-man band, and that's a fun instrument that the kids love.
It could be going from perhaps it's later in the afternoon. I've just got the final stages to restore now and put it back together again, so hopefully it'll be going this week. And also, of course, we're on call for busloads any time, any day, where we do a full live show, and we're very pleased to have that support.
That's great. And if you're looking for something to do this evening, then you couldn't go past going to Whitaker's Museum at 7 o'clock and catching a concert by the Matariki String Quartet and pianist Justin Bird. Thank you very much, Lloyd, and good luck for the future.
Thank you.
And we'll go out with a track of you and Joan playing a duet from Phantom of the Opera.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is broadcast every Saturday here on Waiheke Radio from 10 to 12, and it's brought to you by Placemakers. All of these interviews are also available for download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz.